Are you tired of spending your time and money chasing strategy after strategy, only to discover what worked 10, 5, or even 2 years ago is not working now? Things shift fast in the online space, and if you're not keeping up, you're getting left behind. It's time for something different. Welcome to the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast, where every single episode will be jam-packed with proven, profitable strategies, behind-the-scenes secrets, and what's working now resources from industry experts and global influencers to help you scale your business, shorten your learning curve, and stand out in a crowded, noisy marketplace. And now, your host, award-winning marketing and media strategist and international speaker, Patty Farmer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast. I'm your host, Patty Farmer, and I'm looking forward to sharing today's industry expert with you. And I really love the topic we're going to be talking about today, because today we're going to be talking about how to forget brainstorming and try question storming. And I know that's probably bringing up a few questions for you already, and we haven't even gotten started yet. So let me tell you a little bit about our guest, and then we'll dive right in. So Melina Palmer is the CEO of the Brainy Business, which provides behavioral economic training and consulting to businesses of all sizes from around the world. As an applied behavioral economist, Melina works with companies to share the brain science behind why customers buy and employees buy in, allowing them to be more brain friendly. She teaches via the Texas A&M Human Behavior Lab, has written 3 books, and hosts the Brainy Business Podcast, which has nearly 1 million downloads from more than 170 countries. So, Melina, I am so happy to have you here with me today.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. And like, fun fact of, we actually just passed the 1 million download mark about 4 days ago. So you're the first place where I could say that the Brainy Business has over 1 million downloads now.
I love that so much. Like, you heard it here, folks. Yeah. Right? You know, so we want to make sure that we jump right in and listen to her podcast. I mean, who doesn't want to listen to a podcast, The Brainy Business? If you're listening to Marketing, Media, and Money, of course, you're going to want to listen to The Brainy Podcast, right? So I think that makes a lot of sense. But one of the things that Melina is most famous for is behavioral economics. You may be thinking to yourself, what in the world is behavioral economics, and why does it even matter to you? So guess what? That's going to be our first question. So let's dive right into that, Melina, and let's just kind of get them really understanding what that is and set that context for what we're going to be talking to, because I really feel like this is a topic that, you know, sometimes when you hear something and or you go to a conference and you're thinking, oh my goodness, I'm going to call my team right now and we're going to put that into execution right now. This is that day. So make sure everybody has their pen and paper, because we're going to tell you some really great stuff that you're going to want to implement right away. So Melina.
Yeah. So behavioral economics is, I like to say that if traditional economics and psychology had a baby, you would have behavioral economics. And it's essentially a field that came about because traditional economics had a problem in that it assumes logical people making rational choices in absolutely everything they do all of the time. And because we're human, I think we all know that's not really the world that we live in. And so you end up with models that are predicting what someone decided people should do instead of what people actually do. And so over time, you had psychologists, neuroscientists, and economists working together, entering into one another's fields, trying to find if there are these common threads in the brain that can be used to better and more accurately predict what people will really do. And that thankfully there are, and there are hundreds of these concepts that the brain uses to make decisions. And that is what the field of behavioral economics is built upon. And as you said in the intro, what I do as an applied behavioral economist, the other side would be doing more like academic research, is to help people and companies to understand how the brain is really making decisions and communicate in a way that works with the rules of the brain instead of against them, which is what we tend to do kind of naturally, so that employees buy in and customers buy.
I really like that. Would you say that it is applied differently to if you were a brick and mortar business, a corporation, or an entrepreneur?
So context always matters. And so that's just important when you look at any research study or you see a stat that's being touted somewhere. You know, don't just assume, you know, face value, like, well, they did this and I'll do it and it'll be exactly the same. It's not really how that works, because context and very, very small things that we don't think should matter can have a huge impact on decisions that people make. In the case of behavioral economics, we all have some common tendencies and threads that we do, but it may show up in different ways. And like you're saying, in an in-person experience with brick and mortar, so there's a concept that's known as anchoring, which is often done with numbers. And so if you go into the store and you see that they have cans of soup that are on sale for, you know, 30 cents or 50 cents, and it says limit 12. And we may think that wouldn't have an impact on buying behavior. But when you put a limit like that, people actually buy more than when it was an unlimited number of cans that you could get, which is weird when you think about it, right? When I could get more, I end up buying less. And when there's a limit, why would I buy more of them? And this, you know, number prime that's put there helps you to think about that kind of, well, maybe I don't need 12, but I'll just get 10 or 7 or 12, you know, I'll get a week's worth. Whereas if you saw the sale, you might've gotten two or three. And so in a store where you're walking by, you may see that in a way that you would see differently when you're on a website or if someone is presenting prices in an actual pitch over the phone with somebody, or you're learning about it on a video. And so there are different ways to apply the same concepts, and it's important to think about the context where those come up. But there are some real tried and true things that you can go about testing in any type of business.
I think that makes a lot of sense, because from buying behavior, for sure, for me, that even though I'm in marketing and I know better, I still do it. Like when I go in to buy moisturizer, but if they're bundling that with eye cream and, you know, something else with it, I may not even need that product, but because I know I'm going to save money by buying it in a bundle, I will. Like right. It almost works for me almost all the time. And then I get home and I'm like, why did I do that? And then I usually try the product and most often I like it, but the fact of the matter is I wouldn't have. And so when you think about all the stores you go in and how they bundle all those things together, that really is a good one too. But I also know that from a marketing point of view for myself, I always hear from my clients, like, you know, they're so worried about data, right? You know, like data. And I'm like, I know, but what about behavior? Right? Data is good, but it's best when you can take data and behavior, right? You get such a better, you know, it's kind of like this plus this equals this, right? You know, so you get I think it's really about merging both those things, and we get something from both of those things, and when you can put them together. So I think that's really important. But I also think that as entrepreneurs, we don't always have the same access, right? You know, than big companies and stuff. So we have to do it in other ways, right? And So I think that is important as well. And would you share maybe like some different way that we should look about it? Because I feel like entrepreneurs, a lot of times I know when I'm talking to them, they're still trying to do things the way big companies do, right? And they think that's how they should do it. And really, it isn't. They should be looking at it different. And it's kind of like a shift in perspective. And I'm all about shifts. So, right. So let's see, how can we shift a little bit? I mean, sometimes it doesn't even have to be a big shift, right? Sometimes it gets to be very, very small, but it makes a big impact, right? So what would you say to that?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, this is what all of behavioral economics really is built upon. And for me, the work I do is looking for those small tweaks that can make a huge difference. And you know, investing in, you know, the fewest number of things that can get you the biggest amount of lift. And as you said, I work with small business owners and entrepreneurs as well. And you don't have that. It's hard to see, even when we see, entrepreneurs that have made it, right? We see on Instagram or whatever, people are sharing the amazing work they do and the lift that they see and what they have going on. And it feels like, wow, how are they doing all of those things? You know, Amy Porterfield comes to mind, and I love Amy Porterfield. She's amazing. And she has a big team of people that make it look like it's one person doing a whole lot of stuff. And that's great, right? But you have people running very specific aspects into the data and looking, drilling way, way down, like you said, in a way that data may exist for you, but you don't have to know everything about everything. In the space of behavioral economics, everything matters, but you can't do everything all at once. So what I tell my clients and through the podcast and everything is, you need to know what matters the most for you, what is going to be the biggest impact, and focus on less things and do them really, really well. And the other thing is, I find when people come to me, it's really easy to feel overwhelmed by all of what you could get and all of the people you could talk to and these things, especially when we're thinking about selling, we're looking at pricing. As you know, my third book is about pricing strategy. And it's easy to feel like we need to get everybody, and you get really sucked into this idea of numbers and the millions of people on Instagram and this and that, and I have to be in all these different places. But for a lot of people, and look, even I'm sure you have a lot of people that do consulting or coaching that are listeners of the show, and you need, you know what, if you got 10 new clients next year, would that just be absolutely amazing? Like, that would change everything for you, or two or five, or maybe it's 50. It's definitely not, you know, 100 million or whatever it is for most of the people listening, right? It's a very reasonable number. And this is actually an application of anchoring in another way. We get hooked onto these big numbers and things that are being touted by people and feeling like you have to be everywhere and as high as possible. When really, if you step back and say, what do I actually need? And let's say it is that you want to add one new client a month, right? If you could have 12 new clients next year, that would change everything for you. You probably know that many people in your immediate network and through LinkedIn or whatever it is that's your right path. And you could probably pinpoint and pick out 20 or 50 people that you think would be ideal for you, and just go all in on focusing on them and what they care about, and show up for them and be visible, that when they're ready, you're the one that they're thinking about. It's so much easier than the stress that comes in spreading ourselves too thin and trying to be for everyone everywhere all of the time. So that narrowed focus that allows you to then be more customized to what they need and show up in a really great way makes it so, you know, you're not even selling anymore. You're just constantly warming up all of those potential leads.
No, I really believe that sales is service if it's done right. Mm-hmm. Sales is service if it's done right. But when you do get really focused, like you're saying, it also makes it easier for people to remember you when mm-hmm. they want that thing.
Right.
Right. You know, they're like, oh, wait a second. The person who's talking about that all the time and who's sharing relevant, you know, consistent content about that is this person. But if mm-hmm. you're talking about 50 things, they may not remember the one or two times you focused on that one thing that they had. So I really agree with you 100%. And I believe that we all have our zone of genius or our brilliance, area of expertise. Right. You know, so we want to make sure that we focus on that. And I think that is really important.
For sure. And, you know, one of the things that I always say is building on what you were saying there, really, like, life and sales, business is a really long game. And the more that you can be doing to be of service to others, to be generous, one of the other big concepts, one of my favorites from behavioral economics is that of reciprocity, that when someone gives to us, we feel inclined to give back. And often we give back bigger than what was given to us because we just see more in the gesture or whatever it is. And so in the case of social media, in the case of doing, this is why things like lead magnets and those freebie type of giveaways where you're putting something out there, or even, you know, podcasts take a lot of time to create and give out for free for people to be able to have access to. And that's a gift that when then someone is ready to buy, they feel like they want to give back to you because you gave something to them. And it can be something, you don't have to start a podcast or anything like that. And for most people, I would say don't. It takes a lot of work. It's probably not worth it. But being able to give just by sharing someone else's work on your LinkedIn, right? How many times you see someone posted something and you think to yourself, that's really cool that they're doing that, and then do nothing else. Maybe you click like or give it a heart or something. Maybe you go and comment, wow, amazing. But how many people then go and share and say, oh my gosh, Patty is doing such a cool thing. Isn't this amazing? Everyone look at my friend Patty. And then like if that someone does that for you, you remember who reshared your content, right? In a way that you stand out, that then they're going to, again, remember you more than, you know, can you remember of if 50 people liked your last post, do you remember who liked it versus who commented versus who shared on your behalf? So just showing up and being kind makes a huge impact when people are ready to buy.
I agree with you. And when you're thinking about reciprocity, there are so many ways to stand out. It makes me think of this one particular time that I will never forget. And it was about a podcast. And for those people who don't know this, when you leave a review for somebody on a podcast, which is really probably one of the best compliments you can, but it doesn't show up in 10 seconds, right? You know, sometimes it takes 24 hours for it to show up. So one time I get this post that somebody put on my social media, and they said, Patty, I really would love to be a guest on your podcast. I enjoy your podcast so much. I loved this episode and that episode, which was really nice just doing that. But they took it even further. They said, I just left you a 5-star review. Here's a screenshot of the review I left you. Mm-hmm. And then they posted it like as a picture, right? As a graphic. And so, of course, if I would have went to look at that to see if they really did it, I wouldn't have seen it yet because it wouldn't have shown up yet. When she did that and posted that publicly, I was like, wow, now that was really going above and beyond to want to be on my podcast. So, of course, she was on my podcast, and I have literally used her as an example forever. Right. You know, and so she uses it too and tells the story a lot too. So that story has been told, but really that was really going above and beyond. So from a reciprocity point of view, I refer her to everybody. If they have a podcast and I think she is a good fit, I literally tell everybody about her because I've never forgotten that she did that. Because who does that? Like that was really, now I do it all the time myself, but because it's a great strategy. And if you're listening, it's probably a good strategy for you too. But I mean, it is one of those things that you don't forget. So I think that, you know, that's a way that you can practice reciprocity, but do it in a way that'll really make you stand out. Mm-hmm. And that's always like a good thing, right?
Yeah, so, Melina, definitely.
Here's the thing. I know you didn't wake up one day and say, you know what? I think I want to go into behavioral economics. Yeah. So, I'm sure that that didn't happen. So, you know, we all have like a meandering road that gets us to where we really are at the intersection of our passion and purpose. So if you could tell us, like, what was that? Like, how did you get to that?
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't even have known that that even existed. If I had,
yeah. Well, it is a really new field. So that is a part of, you know, when I was going to school, it wasn't a thing as a small child. And they say, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it's like a behavioral economist, right? Like, that's not a thing that, that was around when I was a kid, really in a public way. So I actually got my undergrad in marketing, you know, business administration and marketing. And I remember there was one like section of one book in one class, just this tiny, tiny little thing that was talking about buying psychology, like why people do the things they do, why they buy the things they buy. And I thought it was just the most fascinating thing that I had ever seen. And I had never really considered additional education at that point. I myself am like first generation college graduate in my family, and like didn't, you know, you don't think about master's degrees or things like that, or I didn't at that point, but I had said like, I want to go back and get a master's in this. I was so excited about it. And after I graduated, I spent the better part of 10 years calling schools around the country and asking about this. And they said, that's not a thing. It doesn't exist, that we don't have a program for that. You can make one if you want and come here if you want to. It's like, well, if I know what I need to learn, I probably don't need to pay you for that. So I'll just kind of put a pin in it. And so I was working in marketing and industry for about 10 years and just kind of applying these things without fully realizing, you know, intuiting some of this. And I was in an innovation fellowship, I guess is kind of the best way to explain it, this 2-year program within the industry that I was in. And they brought in some people from the team, it's the Center for Advanced Hindsight out of Duke University. And they were there talking about their work. And I said, oh, this is the thing. This is what I've been looking for. And they said it was called behavioral economics. And as a marketer, I was like, no, it isn't. lo and behold, it is and was. And I found myself a master's program in behavioral economics, and worked out that I was able to leave my corporate role and really focus on that. And then I realized how few people were talking about this applied aspect, and kind of had that, why not me? And someone encouraged me to do a podcast, and it was the first of its kind in the world. And it's, you know, just really built from there.
And that's how we got to those over a million.
Yay. Yes.
That's awesome. I love that story. Okay. So now let's kind of shift a little bit over to our question storming instead of brainstorming.
Yep.
So I think this is what really had me reach out to you to want you to be on the podcast, because I thought behavior economics was pretty interesting. I'm in marketing, right? So I loved that. But boy, I got to tell you, this question storming really was a shift for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't even tell you. It was like the light bulb moment for me. And since I spoke to you about it, I probably put in probably 50 hours of doing research on it.
Cool.
And I feel like I could do a whole solo episode like myself. I'm like, no, I think we'll have to have you back, because I don't think we'll cover it all in one, but we're going to do our very, very best, right? So thinking about when we were in school, so we're going to go back to school again and talk about structure. Like, we all were taught brainstorming, right? You know, that was the thing. You know, companies do it with their teams. You know, I do my marketing agency. We do brainstorm. Not anymore. Now we question storm. I have literally shifted all that. Yeah. But I mean, really, we thought that was the best course of action because it had the word brain in it, right? So mm-hmm. if it had the word brain in it, it must be what it is that we should do. So let's kind of talk about that really. So how does the brain really work, and why does that matter to everyone in business instead?
Yeah. So like you said, just because it has the word brain in it doesn't mean it works well with how our brains actually work and process information. And one of the things that I say most often is, you know, it's really easy to find the right answer to the wrong question. And we've been trained through school, as well as looking at how our brains are actually wired, is to find the right answer, right? And it feels like every question has an answer. And the way that we find a problem, we tend to think is the only problem and the right way to address it. So our brains are set up to feel like we're better, faster, stronger, smarter than everyone else, including the us of 5 minutes ago. And when we see a problem, think this is it, and I'm going to go solve that thing. You know, how much time do you actually invest in understanding the true problem before you jump into solving mode? And for most people, it's definitely not enough. You know, it's been attributed to say, you know, Einstein was asked if he had an hour to save the world, how would he spend his hour? And that he said he would spend 55 minutes understanding the problem and 5 minutes solving it. Now, if we think about the things we're doing and you think about your ratio of how much time you spent thinking about the problem, did you even spend 5 minutes of your respective hour thinking about the problem before you jumped into solve mode? And again, for a lot of people, it really isn't that way. We say, like, we need more customers. Jump in. How do we go get more customers? Let's jump in and answer this, right? Let's brainstorm. How are we going to get more of them? But do you actually need more? Or do you just need to do a better job with the people you already have, right? If you look at a slight change of question, it can get you to a completely different place. And when we look at behaviors, and like I was saying, things happen in micro moments, we need to look at really tiny tweaks that can have a huge impact for things. Another stat that always is really mind-blowing for people is that on average, like if you think about how many decisions you make in an average day, you know, for the listener here, as you're thinking, how many decisions do you remember making yesterday? You know, what comes to mind for you? I often, like when I do this in a training or doing a keynote, it's always fun. Someone will say 2, you know, 10.
I'm thinking 25.
right. And so actually people make an average of 35,000 decisions every day. 35,000 decisions. And the bulk of those are done on habit and quick rules of thumb, which are these concepts of behavioral science. That's how we are able to be predicting what people will do, because we know these rules that subconscious brain is using to make decisions in a predictable way. And so we know that we're going to jump in and try something in a certain way, and we get bogged down in the quick answering of stuff and the way we've always done things. So shifting out of that kind of status quo, thinking about problems in new ways, knowing that we can't possibly know everything. Another way to look at that, those numbers, would be to say, you know, for every, there's a different stat I should be sharing here, which is if you think about your brain like a computer, which people like to do, that subconscious can do about 11 million bits of processing per second, compared to that conscious brain, which can only do about 40, which is bad ratio wise. Right. And so if we look at this and flip it around and say, for every one piece of information that made it through your subconscious filter as the thing that you see as the problem or the thing to focus on, you essentially ignored or didn't focus on 275,000 other things. And it's possible that those other things may also be true or be more true than what you chose to focus on. So taking some time to invest in really understanding the problem before you jump into the solving is a huge gain for every single business. And question storming, I found, is a great way to do that.
I think that is just such an interesting way to look at it, you know, and it's kind of a wow moment when you really think about it, because when we first started talking about this, some of the things that I thought of that came to my mind immediately are, one, I've always considered myself a fixer, you know, the Olivia Pope of marketing, right? You know, so I always considered myself a fixer and that I do it really well, right? But when you're thinking about it in this context, are you really fixing it if you're jumping in with the problem and you're not doing something else first, right? So I think that was really important too. It made me think about how back in the day, right, you know, everybody wanted to put on their, you know, resume that you could multitask, right? That was a huge thing, that you needed to be a multitasker, and Everybody wanted that. Not so much anymore. Now people want to know that you could focus, right? Not deep multitask. Work. We want you to be able to focus. And then the other thing that it brought up for me was a standing joke between my husband and I, who literally he would make the best Trivial Pursuit partner because he literally is such a reader, but he remembers everything he reads. He's a studier and everything goes into hard drive, I say, right? Because at any given time, he could just pull up and I'm like, where'd you get that? He's like, I don't know, I read it. But he will never say something he doesn't know to be true and he'll always have a stat. Now he's an engineer, so I'm sure that has something to do with it where I'm a creative. But I always like to say that for me, I just put everything, you know, in RAM and I only worry about the things that I need when I need it. And I think I've done it all the way back to when I was in school. I never studied for a test. I just got up that morning, read what I needed to read, went and aced all my tests. But a week later, if you'd ask me, I'm like, I don't know. I don't need to worry about it this week. I just put it in RAM versus hard drive. Mm-hmm. Right. So when you're thinking about this and you do have a problem or there is a problem, there's multiple ways here. Like, I think there's a lot of gold in just this one question, right? There's a lot of gold here in data versus behavior, which is what we kind of talked. That's how we linked it back to that. But the reality really is that the question storming makes so much more sense, especially if you have a team or something where collectively you're using the minds of more than just one. Like, even for yourself, it's good, but collectively, I could see where it would even be better. So why would you say brainstorming doesn't work well with the brain's natural tendency and what the value of question storming would be?
Sure. So what this is, we are, like I said, trained to find an answer to a question when it's presented to us. And in one case, so if you think about with a team, and you're going to do some brainstorming and you ask a question, people are trying to come up with answers. You don't necessarily want to throw out an answer if you're not absolutely confident in it, like you were saying about your husband, right? So you may think, I'm going to do some more research before I say this. I'm going to hold back. You don't want to look stupid if you say something that isn't quite right. And while it seems like it should be free, no, we're just brainstorming. Just throw anything out. People know that they shouldn't do that, right? They hold back in that way. Another thing is often people may be holding back the best ideas because they know that they're really busy and they don't want to get saddled with the project if it comes about where it's like, oh, Melina brought that up. You'd be the best person to start that thing. You go, yikes, I don't want to do that. That's bad. Or, you know, the worst side of that being, I don't want to be the one that everybody goes and points the finger at if it's wrong, if it doesn't work. And they say, who brought that up anyway? Melina, you said that in our brainstorming session. And, you know, you're the reason we went down this path or whatever that is. So those types of fears can make it so, you know, even great ideas get held back because we're worried about looking dumb or getting stuck with projects and things like that. So the thing that what question storming does from the beginning that is different than brainstorming is, in case you couldn't tell, right? So where brainstorming typically starts with some sort of a question, how do we do this thing? And you're coming up with as many answers you can to that very, very narrow question. You instead start with a statement. And often when I'm doing this with a client, it can be in this, what I call a known truth, because I don't like sacred cows as a term. But essentially something that everyone would agree to be true, but is not necessarily true. I've done things like change is hard. We said people want service, not sales. You've had things about we need more customers, right? These things that people are like, yes, of course, that's true. And you just accept as a fact and everything kind of gets built around it. If you start with whatever your statement is, and it can be all sorts of things, then you are throwing out and asking questions about that thing that can open up our brains in a different way. Throwing out a question, I have no, like, I'm not stuck to it. Someone's not going to say, Melina, you asked that question. Like, yeah, I asked a question because I didn't know, right? So you're not getting stuck with anything. And it helps our brains to think about all these kind of disparate opportunities or what if this or why is it like this? You know, if we look at change is hard as an example, which I think most people listening would say like, yeah, change is hard. I know that. That's a fact that change is hard. But
is it?
Right. Is it though? Right. Like you said, we change all the time. And so if we ask, what if change wasn't hard? When can I find an example of when change was easy? is it bad that change is hard? Would people actually get some value in putting in a little bit of effort? What might that look like? When can we make it? Is there a way we can make it easier? Do we care that it's hard? Whatever, right? There are all these things you can ask that put you into a totally different mind space when you determine the question that you want to then work on and go about answering for whatever it is you're trying to do.
I really like that. And you kind of threw out a couple different examples. So considering who our audience is, let's use the example, we need more clients. Because I'm going to say that until you said that statement, everybody was probably thinking, I need more clients. And they're not here with us in person to say, oh, no, I don't want to say that now, because now they may all those things that you just said. But I'm thinking probably a good percentage of people would say that statement is true. I need more clients, right? You know, so let's use that as an example. So let's use, you know, brainstorming versus question storming with that being our statement. I need more clients. And let's kind of just show a few examples of how one would work versus the other.
Sure. So with this, the first thing that you do is you start with your statement and everyone asks as many questions as possible without trying to answer any of them. And this all is based on the way that I go about it is a little bit different, but it was inspired by the Right Question Institute's question formulation technique, which is really cool stuff. And with this, so you start with the statement, you ask a lot of questions, and you don't go about trying to answer any of them. One of the things I always do with clients too is when you feel like, so after you've written about five, or maybe if I tell you, you have like 5 minutes or 10 minutes to be starting to ask questions, you feel like you've asked them all. There are no questions left. I've got them done. And go write 10 more, go 50 more. There are way more questions than you think are possible. And it's always really amazing when you do this in a group that, you know, people are writing questions on their own, let's say, and then you come back and realize that like, wow, they asked questions I wasn't even thinking of and this and that, right? So you may end up coming back to realize that you do need more clients, but it may be in a completely different way than what you thought. So that's something where it's important to ask the question and kind of get around it to determine what it is that you really need. So take the time to ask as many questions as you can. And like I said, don't try to answer them is step one. Once you've done that, you go through a process of expanding those questions. And so, and really reframing them. So we can have one of the easiest ways to think about doing this is taking your open-ended questions, those that end in a way that you can't answer with a yes or no question. You know, we're thinking back to like fourth grade when we probably did this a lot. And so take those open questions and close them, and then take closed questions and open them. So in the example of we need more clients, if you asked a question that was, how many clients do we need to hit our income number? Right. That is a very fixed number, right? To say we need 10, we need 1,000, right? There's a number there. So that's a closed question. And if you think about that question of how many clients do we actually need, say, how is there a way to determine the optimal number of clients for us? That's all. And then like I say this, I'm like, okay, so that's actually close to. So then like, what would I ask? I could say,
it seems to me though, if somebody was going to ask that question or made that statement, we need more clients, to me, and maybe it's because I'm in marketing, but to me, it's almost the wrong question, because it's really like, how much money are you trying to generate? Because how many more clients? I mean, it's like, well, really, the question to me is, say, for example, what you're really asking is we want to generate, say, $250,000, right? Right. I need more clients. That doesn't necessarily mean that, right? It means like you could get to that number by having X amount of one-on-one clients or X amount of group clients or X amount of people. Like there's all different kinds of way that we generate revenue. So really, it's not just a question that then you're just going to give an answer because for there's sure. so many ways to do it, right?
Yep, absolutely. And so just thinking about like perfect point, like you get fixated in the way that you've done things and in the current model with what we have people currently doing with us and how we've always done everything the same way. Maybe we need more. But is it just that, like, is there a way that our, what additional products and services, like what needs do our existing clients have that we're not fulfilling? Like, is there something that we're not doing that we could be looking into here and to see, are they going to someone else when they should be coming to us? And how might we build something out that could be even better? Or is there a way that people would be excited to be paying us more and that we could be filling a need, like you said, to get to that number? Like, you may have 100 clients already and they're paying you a small amount, but there's an opportunity to increase what those people are doing with you, where you don't really need more clients. You just need the people that are already doing business with you to do more. And often what you see too is you may be losing a lot. So your attrition rate may actually be the problem, that you're really good at closing deals and getting people in, but then you're not living up to the services. So you're losing so much, you're bleeding clients so constantly that they're never actually staying long enough because you're focusing on bringing in more, 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 and not on what they're getting when they're there. And if you focus on the service that you're providing for people that have signed up and really nurturing the clients you do have, you may not have to worry as much about bringing in new blood because you aren't losing so many people in the process.
And also, you know, I think this could be like a statement that could go back to your, like, is it true? But it appears, right, that it costs more to find a new client than it does to retain one you already have, right? You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, what could you already be doing? So if it actually is that you need to generate more revenue, like, it could be just how else can you support the clients that you already have, or what partners do you have that maybe could come in and you could collaborate, or whatever the case may be. Now, I have to tell you, Melina, there was a time I went to this event. I will never forget it. It was one question and it was kind of a game changer for me. And it was a conference and they had Roger, I think his name was Roger Moore of Wealth Dynamics, if anybody's heard of that. But he asked this question. So we had us all take this assessment, right? And I was a creator, no surprise there to the people who are listening. And he had us all get on whatever we were on the sidewalk. And we all had like a secondary one too. Mine was Star. And so then after we all got in our little groups, he said, you know, pick somebody to be, you know, the leader, right? You know, so I got chosen. And then he said, I'm going to share a story. And I got to tell you, I just love this based on what you're saying. So he's like, I got to share a story. So you get a call from your number one client. This is what he said. You get a call from your number one client who makes up over 50% of your income and tells you that he wants to come in the next day to talk to you because he's thinking about leaving. What would you do with the 24 hours? That was the question, which I thought it was such a great question. Now, I was a creator, right? So to me, when he asked that, there was only one answer, which is kind of funny. There was one answer to me that immediately came to mind. And that answer was, well, if I only have 24 hours and he may leave, my first question was like, why would we ever have one client that made up more than 50% of our income?
Don't do that. That's
right. Yeah. That was
one.
Like the first thing, right. But then I thought to myself, if I only have 24 hours, like I need to be like working hard in that 24 hours to replace that income. So everybody that was a creator in my group, we were all like, oh, yes, that's the answer. So anyway, when the 5 minutes was up and then he was going to go around and he wanted to know. So he came to me first and I told him and he said, oh, that's a good answer. Right. You know, and we're like, yeah, that's the answer. I remember I was like, oh, yes. And then he went to the next group. And the person who is a leader there said, well, we would spend the 24 hours trying to figure out where we could take care of him better so he wouldn't leave. Mm-hmm. Right. And I, in my head, when I heard them, I'm like, well, of course we're going to do that. But what if he says, no, we got to replace the income. It's more than 50%. So I was like, yeah, we were going to do that too. But like, this is what we're going to do. Right. Then they went to the next group and that person said, oh, well, we're going to create a policy and procedure so this would never happen again. And I'm thinking to myself, well, of course we're going to do that too, but we're not going to do this in the 24 hours. Right. You know? And so it was just like amazing to me that a whole group of people would come up with that answer. And I'm like, what? That's not the answer. Like, this was the answer, right? And when we got done, he said, well, you were all right.
Right.
And his whole point of the story was, in case anybody hasn't already figured out, was that when we hire, we always pick people who think like us, and you really need somebody on your team of each one of those. Mm-hmm. And that's how things would be done better, right? Is that of all those people. So when I had that conversation with you, it brought me back to that story that was such a game changer for me. Because in my mind, I thought, wow, when he threw out that question, what if instead of putting us in groups asking that question, we question stormed instead? Like, man, how amazing would that have been? And I have never forgotten it. I've never forgotten the story. But then that one conversation I had with you when I invited you to come be on my podcast, as soon as we got off that call, I thought of that story.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, man, if I would have understood this concept, or he did even better, mm-hmm. before, I feel like I still want to contact him, right? And say, well, what about this? Because every time I've shared this story, people say, oh, wow, that's really a great story. We should do that, right? You know, everybody loves the story. Now I think the story is great, but I think that this one is better. Like adding mm-hmm. this to it, it's like, oh man, this is like the cherry on top that just is the Mac Daddy of the thing, right? You know? So with that said, can you, you know, wouldn't you agree that like if we would have question stormed that rather than just putting us in groups, like we probably would have came up with a much better answer to the problem, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I like the idea of splitting the people up because you get to see how it does a lot of the same thing of realizing how many additional questions there are and things that you're not thinking of. What the obvious answer was for you is not the only answer. Rory Sutherland from Ogilvy, he says, you know, the opposite of a good idea can still be a good idea. There's lots of other things that you could be doing, but if you don't take the time to think about them before you start jumping into, like you said, when we look at like all any of those could work and any of those could go horribly wrong if you're not preparing for some of these other aspects, right? So giving the example of, we're going to just focus on like finding new clients, and that's what we're going to do, and we're working on that, and we've already written this guy off. He comes in for the meeting, it's like, well, if you want to leave, we don't even care, we got somebody new. And definitely not saying that's how you would have gone into that meeting, but it could go that far. Or they feel,
yeah,
like
now
not...
you don't have one person who's 50%, you replaced him and now you've got like two or three.
Or you created a self-fulfilling prophecy where you like believe they're leaving and there's nothing you can do when it's done, and so you come into the meeting with a weird energy that derails some stuff. That's like the worst case of that scenario. The other side, for the people that are maybe thinking, oh man, we're going to do everything we can to give him what he wants, and like, how do we fill all the needs? Like, he didn't tell you anything about why he's considering leaving. You're now jumping to a bunch of conclusions for what you think is wrong, and maybe building a product or something that doesn't even solve the issue that this person actually has. And maybe you're getting really desperate and you're thinking you're going to cut costs and you're going to offer them a discount or anything to keep them, that they're going to stay. And maybe that person's not going to be profitable anymore. And there's a weird power dynamic now, and that's its own problem, right? And so being thoughtful about all of what you could do, and maybe you have like one team that's going into investigating what could be going on and what options you might have, depending on what they could say that they're interested in or why they might be thinking about leaving. And you have another team that's working on figuring out plan B in case this derails, but we want to be kind of working both of those angles. But if you didn't have diversity of thought, if you didn't take the time to question storm, potentially you would have gone down one path that might be the right one, but it also might not.
I love that, right? You know, so when you really think about it, so this kind of is like next level for me, right? I really like it. So I feel like I question everything, and I would say my superpower is really that I'm an idea generator, right? Mm-hmm. And a problem solver. So to me, to have that be my superpower, and then this is like, oh my goodness, is like you gave me like, you know, extra bold coffee, right? You know, like this whole concept thing. So I really love it. And I think, you know, my audience is probably going, oh my gosh, like they're going to want to, you know, do something about it too. And thankfully, we have something for them to do because you have an amazing gift that you're going to give them. So why don't you tell them a little bit about the gift?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, as we said, I have written 3 books, 2 of which are already out when this will come out. 3rd one's coming soon. I have for your listeners special for everyone who wants to go check out the first chapter of any of my books. You can go to thebrainybusiness.com/MMM and you can get the first chapter of any of the books for free to give it a read. This is some reciprocity in action there. See if it's a fit for you, learn a little bit more, and just check that out. And I definitely talk about question storming in those as well.
I love that. And since you mentioned it, you are going to have a 3rd book coming out very, very soon. So tell us a little bit, give us a little sneak peek about the 3rd book.
For sure. So that is called The Truth About Pricing, understand or how to apply behavioral economics so customers buy, and really is all about psychology and pricing and understanding how we can think about things in a different way to make it so it's easier for people to buy from us and gain lots of pricing confidence in the way that you present information. It's the closest I could get to a book that's like, when you get pricing, people are like, just do it for me. Tell me what I'm supposed to do. Like, this book is the closest, you know, you could get to helping people to be able to feel really confident and be successful in their pricing and sales.
And how and when are they going to be able to get that book?
Of course. Thank you. So that is already on pre-sale on Amazon for if you're going to check it out, The Truth About Pricing. And it will be available and shipped to you on January 9th of 2024.
Oh, I can't wait to get my copy. So that sounds great. So this is the Marketing Media Money Show, right? So we've been talking about Marketing Media Money, but I always like to ask my guests, if you had to narrow it down to just one strategy, one Marketing Media Money strategy, what would that strategy be?
Yeah, I end every episode of The Brainy Business by saying to remember to be thoughtful. And that's my signature line as well, as to be thoughtful. It's really kind of a mantra at The Brainy Business. And it has a couple of aspects to it. You know, one is to be thoughtful about your own response to things like we've been talking about today. The first thing you saw or the thing you wanted to do, taking a moment to say, well, why did I do that instead of this? I wonder why this was that, you know, a certain way. Just taking that extra moment to pause and be more thoughtful in the decisions you make and seeing choices other people make and asking those sorts of questions can go really far in helping to better relate to people and to optimize your own habits and behavior. And then the second side of that, be thoughtful, goes to another piece we were talking about business being a long game and giving first and knowing that you may never get back, but giving really generously. Just be thoughtful to others, be really kind, and it always comes back to you in a really good way, I believe. And not always in the way that you think, but it's definitely good, you know, go with the good karma, be thoughtful.
I love that. I think that is really, really nice. So I know my audience is going to want to connect with you. Tell them what's the best way to, you know, really learn about you, find all your other goodies, because you have so many of them. Where should they go to connect with you?
Well, thank you. Best place is just to go to my website, which is thebrainybusiness.com. You can find books and podcasts and ways to work with me and all that there. You can also find me on all the socials as The Brainy Biz, B-I-Z.
Yes, perfect. Thank you so much, Melina, for being here. You were so generous in sharing your expertise, and I really appreciate that. I feel like we just scratched the surface of this topic, and I know that I'm going to want to have you back again once that 3rd book comes out. So everybody be ready for that. But thank you so much for being here with me today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And thank you to my audience. I appreciate each and every one of you showing up every single week and joining us on the Marketing Media Money Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, and I'm sure you did, please subscribe and review the podcast on your favorite listening platform. Until next week, have a phenomenal, productive, and profitable day.
Thank you for joining us today on the Marketing, Media, and Money podcast. To shorten your learning curve even more, make sure to grab your free copy of the Marketing, Media, and Money magazine at www.marketingmediamoney.com. I promise your business will thank you.